heavens don't. Like to start a meditation and get comfortable. You start by watching your breath. Close concentration on your breath. ask your heart teacher to come. Your heart teacher comes and sits in front of you to meditate with you. We bow down to our heart teacher by thinking of one of their beautiful qualities. Then we make an offering to our heart teacher. The best offering is something good that you've done in the last few days. Offer it like a flower, the offering of your practice. Purify your heart for meditation by thinking of something negative you've done in the last few days and confess it openly to your heart teacher. And also whisper in your teacher's ear something, another good thing you've done in the last few days or a few months. Some kindness you've shown to somebody. Also bring to mind some kindness you've seen another person do. There's plenty of examples in Jesus Christ. Think of a goal in your personal life, somebody you would like to be in a week or a month. Try to picture clearly what you would like to become in a week or a month. Get a strong, clear picture of what you would like to be. Then ask your heart teacher to help you, guide you, to become that person that you'd like to be. Ask your heart teacher to stay always close, guide you today and the rest of your life and beyond. Then we'll start the actual meditation. That's the warm up or the preliminary. Then follow your breath again. Put your mind on your breath. Keep your mind on your breath. Then to start today, we'll do a very simple meditation. It's called Chabalyasha, and I'd like you to just place your mind, use your mind to look at your own mind, step back from your own mind, and look at your own mind. Try to become aware of what you're thinking, what you're feeling, as we sit here, what thoughts are going to your mind? What feelings are going to your mind? So we'll spend a few minutes and concentrate on your own mind. What thoughts are there? What feelings are there? Especially, I'd like you to look for evaluate how you feel, what kinds of emotions, what kinds of feelings. Are they happy feelings or sad feelings or not much of either? Do you feel comfortable? Do you feel uncomfortable? Do you feel happy, nervous? Try to get in touch with your feelings. And on a larger scale in your life, step back from your whole life, look at your life as it is now, and do you feel that you're happy in your life? Is your life, whole life right now, do you feel happy in your life? Don't judge or don't deliberate, just try to check. Do you feel happy in your life? Does your life feel contented? And do you feel at peace? Do you feel quiet and happy about your life? if your mind wanders, bring it back to the question, how do you feel? How's your life going? Do you feel a sense of contentment or peace about your life? Don't ask why you feel how you feel about your life. Don't look too deep. Just try to think about your life and your state of mind, your mind. And is it a happy mind? Is it a peaceful mind? Is it a contented mind? Then the last step of every meditation is to think of others in need, in our life, in our world, and send them the sweet energy of your meditation. Offer the goodness of meditating to others. Clocks run slower in this part of the world. They all have really long hair, longer than mine. And more. Not so great. Okay, let's start. It's an honor to teach here, to be asked to be taught here. In such a holy place, such a grand experiment going on here, and I'm not allowed to talk about the outside world at all, except to say your work is going very well. And already you have wrought great changes in the outside world. I don't know if you don't know. And I can't tell you. But it seems like your great effort win, and your meditations are having a profound effect on the world, state of the world. And beautiful. Things are happening, unexpected, beautiful things are happening. I think it reminds me of when Ken Rinpoche used to do prayers when the Mets were down 5 runs. Like, same kind of forces are at work. And profound, beautiful things happening in the outside world. Okay? And it's the great effort of the retreatants and all the people working so hard to keep them here. And Lama Christie's working very hard. The caretakers are, those who haven't broken down yet, are working hard. And there are many hundreds of people helping on the outside. Unexpected help coming from everywhere. So it's a very beautiful, it's a beautiful thing you're doing here, and there's profound, beautiful things happening because of your work. Okay. So keep it up. It's a little bit to go still. So, I had an idea for a teaching. Me and Lama Marut were, you know, thinking about what to do here, and then the idea came to Lama Marut would teach bodhicitta, the changing the world, right? Which is what the people here are already doing, right? Their retreat is already changing the world. In a way, everything they do in this retreat is bodhicitta already. So then Lama Marut was kindly agreed to teach that, and then I thought I would do talk about concentration or meditation, because they kind of go together, right? So if you can meditate well, then the meditation itself can change the world and lead to kindness. I think if we understand how the world works and we understand where things are coming from in our life, then inevitably we come to compassion. Inevitably, a person who understands the world has to come to compassion. And then we didn't know what Lama Christie was going to teach, but we figured it would probably fit in somewhere. Which it will. So my plan for the 4 days is, I thought on the first day, we could review what we know about meditation, how to meditate, and the traditional presentation of the levels of meditation. I thought it might be useful. I remember when I was in Tariya Retreat, and I had, you know, all the books, and I had all the charts and the meditation poster. We put the meditation poster up on the yurt, and I had to hit my head on it every time I went across the yurt, but it didn't help at all. I didn't look at it after a few days. I just walked around it. So I thought, I don't know. I was trying to think about my three-year retreat and what I think would have helped me to do a better job. You know, like the challenges I had 6 months in, and then 1 year in, and then 2 years in. And then I thought, I was trying to think of the most useful thing for the retreatants, and also for the rest of us. And I think I'd like to go over the traditional teaching on meditation in the first day. And then there's a beautiful, you know, the traditional chart that we use with the elephant and the rabbit and all those guys. It only goes up to a certain point. You know, the ninth meditation level, which is what that goes up to, is not the meditation level you need to see emptiness directly, for example. So the chart goes up to just before the deepest forms of meditation, shamatha, the deepest forms of meditation. It actually sort of ends just before that, and it's not very clear on what happens after that. And so I thought it would be nice to go through what happens when you do get very good meditation and you keep getting higher and higher, and then you're just about to reach what we call shamatha, or you could say perfect meditation, right? Then there's sort of a, what do you call it? Gray area, or there's a dark area between shamatha and between the end of the meditation chart and what happens to you when you see emptiness directly. What's happening to your state of concentration? or you know, that area is sort of gray in the scriptures. It's sort of difficult area. You have gained single-pointed ekagra. You have gained single-pointed concentration. You're not quite to shamatha, to the deepest form of meditation yet. Then there's a bunch of things that has to happen. And they're very strange, and they're very unusual. And so I was working on that myself, and there was a very beautiful presentation of moving from the ninth level of single-pointed concentration up to shamatha through certain pranic means, like using the inner body and working with your prana. So since Diamond Mountain, so many people are interested in yoga and the inner body, I thought that would be really beautiful to talk about the transition from the highest states of the nine states of meditation up to shamatha. And then there are some beautiful descriptions through the centuries of what happens to your inner body between the highest meditation and shamatha. And those have to do with Xinjiang, prashabda. Xinjiang means, traditionally Xinjiang means a sort of blissful state of body and mind, which is what pushes you over the, what do you call it? It pushes you over the last hurdle before you see emptiness directly. Like you get a state of bodily and mental bliss, which is called Xinjiang. And then that takes you into shamatha, and that's a tool with which you can perceive emptiness directly. And then there are some beautiful explanations of what's happening to your inner body, to your prana, during those final steps before you see emptiness. So those are very, what do you call it? Those are sort of very attractive to me. The whole thing, the whole question of what's happening in your inner body at that state. Is very, what do you call it? You're not allowed to talk, neither are you. intriguing to me. And I thought it would be cool to talk about that, because then maybe you could work on your inner body and sort of bring those states on more quickly if you could work from the inside and with your prana and also to your meditation, you see? So I thought the second day, those pranas, there are certain good kinds of prana which during Xinjiang replace bad kinds of prana in your body, okay? The bad kinds of prana have a special name. It's called Nengen Len, and you can't repeat it after me. Nengen Len, it's very difficult to say in Tibetan. It's like she shuffles, she shores, she shuffles. It's like Nengen Len. Nengen Len is a very, very difficult idea. And each ancient school of India has a different thought about it. What is Nengen Len? But just briefly, traditionally, Nengen Len means some kind of very, very subtle, almost like shadow of negativities. You can call it subtle negativities in your being. Which are still there after you reach nirvana, okay? So you reach nirvana, you no longer have ignorance, right? Avidya. You no longer misunderstand things. And you have destroyed the seeds for that misunderstanding. But you still have Nengen Len, okay? You still have some subtle shadow of negativity in you, okay? And then that's linked to a prana in your body. And when you achieve Xinjiang, when you get to the highest stages of meditation, the prana in your body does certain things to that shadow, okay? The prana inside you shifts, and then that shadow is affected. And it makes it, then you can see emptiness, and then also it speeds you towards enlightenment. Okay, so I thought the second day we could talk about Nengen Len as a kind of prana, and how different schools present it. For example, my only school has a special idea about it. Diamond Mountain is about the only place I can talk about these things, because everybody else is behind you. Then the third day,
I thought there are special kinds of meditations you can do to help change the prana in your mind, in your body, as you reach the highest stages of meditation. They all involve observing your state of mind. In the beginning of the path, pre-Tsoklong, before the first of the five paths, there's a thing called Trampa Nyersha, which means close awareness of, for example, your feelings. So the meditation we did at the beginning was a sort of a Trampa Nyersha, where you are watching the state of your own mind, okay? Then I thought on the third day we could go a little further and talk about the details of Shishin. Shishin is the ability to watch your mind during meditation. Okay? So it's also a kind of watching your mind, but it's a very specific watching of your mind, which is mostly focused on am I at a state of equilibrium? Am I at the right place between being too busy and not being busy enough, okay? And that's the story of your life, whether you're on this side of the tent, and that's the story of your life, whether you're on this side of the tent. Everybody, even in a retreat, is struggling with the question of how much activity is too much, and how little activity is too little. One makes the mind dull, and one makes the mind distracted. And so really, a retreat, especially a long retreat, is an exercise in trying to find the balance between being so busy that you are distracted and not being busy enough and then getting spacey or sleepy or bored or unidentified. And then all of us have that balance to maintain. All of us need to struggle to find the balance between being too busy in our lives and being peaceful enough, but then not getting bored unchallenged or uncreative, okay? So we'll talk about Shishin in that sense, between those two extremes. Then we'll go to a special kind of Mahamudra. Mahamudra has many meanings, you all know. There's a beautiful teaching by His Holiness the First Panchen Lama called Dangzin Shangde. In there, as many of you know, he presents a discussion within one person's mind of the positive state of mind and the negative state of mind. So it's a Mahamudra poem. It's like a 50-page poem, in which inside one person's mind, the negative states of mind are battling the positive states of mind, particularly with regard to understanding reality, okay? And more particularly with regard to understanding the reality of your mind. So that's a sort of a very much more advanced version of the learning the skill of watching your own mind, right? How does your own mind not just feel? Or how does your own mind distract or not distract? But how does your own mind look at the world? And then you step back from your own mind and become a witness, and you observe how your own mind is observing the world. And there's a fight going on there. And then in that Mahamudra practice, it's an interesting practice because it's a sort of a, what do you call it? Self-induced schizophrenia. You are seeking to introduce into your mind a counter agent to the normal way that the mind sees reality. And it's a purposeful and, what do you call it? Nobody can help me because you can't talk. It's a very conscious attempt to introduce into your mind a voice which whispers to you when you are perceiving things, the world, the wrong way. You see? So a person who practices that version of Mahamudra then becomes a little bit strange. More strange. Because they are... inside their mind, they're having a struggle all the time, and they're having discussion. And the purpose of that Mahamudra, the purpose of that version of Mahamudra is to introduce an angel into your mind who will start talking in your head and arguing with the devil in your mind. Okay? So that there we'll go through that on the third day. Different ways to watch your own mind. Then on the fourth day, I thought we could again review some of the traditional teachings on physical circumstances which are helpful for a retreat or for meditation. So these are conditions in your life, whether you are in retreat or whether you're having a regular job or a life. These are conditions that will support a peaceful or happy state of mind. Okay? So on the fourth day, we'll continue through. Some of them you know, some of them you've heard before, and some of them you haven't heard before. Some are from Tantra, some are from the Lam Rim, some are from the older Indian literature, but these are ways to affect your physical environment that can help you meditate better and enter a deeper state of concentration. Then I thought at the end of the last day we could go into there's a special Mahamudra meditation you can do, watching your mind and being very sensitive about the degree to which your mind takes the world as being magic. Okay? The degree to which your mind sees the world as being a magical place. And ways to watch that state of mind, ways to observe that state of mind and to foster a state of mind which takes the world more of a miracle than every day. So I thought that would be a nice place to leave it. So basically it's a long journey through different kinds of meditation. What's happening with your prana when your meditation is not going well? How can you change that prana? How can you learn to watch your mind more carefully? And then what are the highest things you can put your mind on as you watch it? Okay? That's the plan. I prepared a big reading. It's 600 pages of Tibetan. And I finished 10 of them. And you're not going to get a reading. But what I thought was, you know, I tend to overdo it. And I thought that what I do is just go through the 600 pages and take out the most important things, which is what I should have done anyway. And then I thought maybe somebody could transcribe the teaching. You see what I mean? Because rather than my lamas encouraged me, rather than doing a long translation of hundreds of pages, perhaps it would be more beneficial for people at this stage in my life if I just regurgitated it to you in a way that mattered to you. And then if someone could transcribe that, and then that would be better than 600 pages of interlinear space, you know, ancient Sanskrit in Tibetan, you know, because it's difficult to understand. So that's my plan, okay? So I hope some people would be willing to help with that afterwards, okay? So here we go. I thought first we could go through the traditional stages of meditation before we reach the treatment of the special pranas in your body, which could, if we could learn to work on those pranas, that we could concentrate better, and our meditations would go better, and our practice would go better. So there's a lot of preliminary work to do before that. So I thought to talk about that work one more time. What I'd like to do before we do that is do another meditation. So everybody could sit up straight. start to watch your breath. Go back to your breath. We won't do the preliminaries because of time, and this is a continuation of the meditation we just did. So where we left off before was we were watching our mind, we were observing our own mind. Let your mind stay where it is, step back with a little part of your mind, and start to watch your mind. See, how do you feel here in this tent? Are you tired? What are your plans in your mind? What's going through your mind right now? How much energy do you have? How do you feel at this moment? And step back and observe your own mind. See, now focus on your feelings. How do you feel right now? Do you feel happy or a little bit down? Neutral? Try to focus on how you feel. You can include your physical feelings. Do you feel hot? Is it comfortable? Do you feel uncomfortable? How's your body feel today? Then come back to your mind. How does your mind feel? Do you feel pretty happy or neutral? I'd like you again to step back and look at your life in general, your whole life. How's your life going now, at this juncture in your life, in this season of your life, in these few years of your life? Do you feel happy? Are you content with your life? Do you feel like your life is going well? And do you often feel some sort of peace about your life or happiness? I think most of us, maybe all of us, if our life is not completely happy, I don't know about you, but for me, my life has rarely been completely happy, and I think about the periods in my life that I wasn't completely happy, and I think maybe all of us tend to think that there's some adjustment we could make in our life, maybe. If we could just do more yoga, or maybe if our meditation was going better, or maybe if one or two people in our lives, it could be a partner, could be a boss, could be children, could be a friend, could be our relatives. We feel like there is something that is something is blocking us from being completely happy. Like, I think many of us feel our lives are fairly happy. And then there are our lives are marred by slight unhappinesses, or certain people, or certain events, or certain situations in our life that we feel are preventing us, or that are blocking us from reaching complete happiness. I think most of us sense what it would be like to be completely happy. We see it on the horizon. We sense it like light at the end of a tunnel, but there inevitably seems to be something between us and complete happiness that is somehow blocking us from that happiness, or preventing us from reaching that happiness. And I'd like you right now in the meditation to try to identify one thing that you'd like to change about your life. It could be a person in your life that you'd like to change, or it could be a situation that you're in that you'd rather not be in, or it could be something about your physical health. But what is it in your life? Please identify now. We all have a sense that there's somebody or something blocking us from being completely happy. What is it in your case, in your personal case? What's standing between you and this sort of soft flow of complete happiness? What would you like to change the most? Then I'd like you to, we're almost finished with this meditation, but I'd like you to look into the roots of this problem, this person or this situation. What are the roots of the problem? How did it start? How did you first meet the person? What were the circumstances in your life that brought this problem to you? what's the history in your life which brought to you the few things that are holding you back from being completely contented and happy? Then I'd like you to release the meditation. And then slowly come back to this room. Okay. So I thought to do the whole traditional teaching on meditation in like 45 minutes, okay? 9 levels, 5 problems, 8 antidotes, 6 powers, 4 states. Okay? Let's see if it's possible. It's kind of fun to try. So, in the traditional presentation of meditation, it comes from different sources, and I'll state the sources as we go. One is called Uttan Namje, Madhyanta Vibhanga, by Maitreya, Lord Maitreya, who's the coming Buddha. He, in his text, which is 16 centuries old, written down by Master Sangha, he set forth the 5 classical problems of meditation and the 8 corrections for those 5 problems. So we're going to go super fast. It's a horse race, okay? Top gear. Through the whole shtick, okay? Because you guys know it. I'm just reminding you, but we have to go through it to get to that high state of meditation just before shamatha, okay? So the first problem for all meditators is called lelo. It's one of the only Tibetan words that sounds like the English, and it means to lay low, meaning it's laziness. I like to call it not feeling like meditating today, okay? So I don't feel like meditating today. And if you cannot overcome this problem, the rest of the problems will never happen to you. Okay. And I have it every day. I mean, don't think it goes away, okay? It doesn't go away. It's there, you know, okay? And because it's maybe the most serious of all meditation problems, there are 4 corrections for it, okay? Which is how we get 8 corrections for only five meditation problems, okay? So the corrections for lelo are called Deba, Dumba, Tsuwa, and Shinjang. Okay, so Deba means it means faith or Shraddha, but in this case it means a clear understanding of all the cool stuff that's going to happen to you if you learn to meditate. Okay, a clear vision of the beautiful things that will happen to you if you learn to meditate well. Okay, that's Deba. I was trying to think about the coolest things that I like about meditation, or what I think are the coolest things. And I think the coolest thing is you could get, if you meditated well, you could get some sort of intuition or sixth sense about the state of the world and where the world is going, okay? I think that's cool. I think if you meditate very well, you can get sort of an overview of the next 500 years or something, or 1,000 years, or 10,000 years. And you would get some sort of insight into the way that this planet is going to evolve in the coming centuries. You would get a deep vision. You know, like, you know, people are always putting out statistics about how much oil is going to be left in 20 years, or what's the population going to be in 50 years. But try to imagine just sitting in your room and having some kind of vision about the way the world is going to go on a gross level, the spiritual level of the world, where it's going to go, and to be able to see that clearly and to feel the currents in that movement, and to see the currents and to be able to ride them or to sense them and see where they're headed in a very growth level. I think that's very beautiful. You see, to be able to see the future, to be able to see, to plot mentally the spiritual evolution of this entire planet. It comes. If you meditate well, it comes. And that kind of ability comes. And it's very, very beautiful. And it makes you very, very happy. Because then you can see the beauty that is evolving in this world, like a butterfly coming out of its cocoon. You can see where this world will go if you meditate well. You can follow those currents, okay? Just for me, that's a single... I'll put that as the single quality that you could be excited about. If you could learn to meditate well, you would see these currents and you could contribute to them and help guide those currents. You see, I think that's really beautiful, Dipa. Dumba means because somebody told you how cool meditation was, you want it. Okay? Dumba means you want it. Like someone's telling you how cool it would be to be able to see the currents of spiritual history of this globe and to affect them directly, then you should get some kind of hunger in your belly for meditation. You should say, I want that, you know? I would really like to be able to do that, you know? Dumba. Tsuwa means, then you naturally you want to work hard, okay? You want to do the effort that's necessary. You cannot get good at meditation unless you try every day and unless you put some serious time into it, okay? I have people who... I say, do you do yoga? They say, yeah, I do yoga, you know. I say, let me see your yoga, you know. And then I'm watching them and, you know, they do a couple poses and then they go get a drink of water. And then they do a couple poses and then they go do some emails, you know. And then then they're wrapping their mat up around the second Surya Namaskar. I'm like, wait, where are you going? You know, they said, I'm done. You know, and I'm like, wow. You gotta work hard, and you gotta work every day. And then, that's tsuwa. Tsuwa means it's not gonna happen. If you do it partway, or if you do it briefly, or if you don't really want it bad enough, then you're just gonna get lay low. You're gonna give up. And you will never see those things in history. And your life will pass in a boring, worldly way, and you'll get old and you'll be watching DVDs, okay? And that's it. So tsuwa means hard, regular work. Every day, hard work, okay? No matter what other people are doing. Nobody else is doing it, just do it yourself, okay? Tsuwa. If you get tsuwa, then you get shinjang. This shinjang is not the same as the shinjang we're going to talk about later, okay? This shinjang means you get good at it. What do you call it? You get wired. You get wired, like your yoga is wired, you know, and you're just really good at it. And the minute you get on the mat, you feel like your body changes. You sit down on the mat and your body changes and your breathing changes. And that's a shinjang. Because shinjang is just like in the groove, you know. You sit down and you're in. And that's shinjang. It's not the same shinjang as we're going to talk about later. It's what happens if you work hard on a regular basis, okay? And there's no other way. You have to work hard every day. And that's the only way, okay? So that's the first problem of meditation, and those are the first four corrections, okay? Second problem is Dhamma Jepa. It's called Dhamma Jepa, okay? Dhamma Jepa means you forgot the instructions, okay? What is it? In meditation, it doesn't mean I forgot the instruction. It means you lost the object, okay? In meditation, the problem of meditation called forgetting the instruction refers specifically to losing your object, okay? Losing the object of your meditation. You're supposed to be meditating and suddenly, you don't know how much time has gone by, but you're suddenly aware that you're not thinking about the object anymore, okay? Okay. All right. I think it's not so bad that you lose the object, it's that you have no clue about, is it 3 days that have gone by? Or, you know, like, Maybe not use the object. And then you're like, dang, I'm going to get back on the object. You get back to the object. And then like 30 seconds later, you're like, where was the object? You know? And so the second problem in meditation is just lose the object completely, okay? The mind goes off the object. You start thinking about lunch. My favorite thing is breakfast. I don't know. But then that happens at every meal, so I don't know what's a better time to eat. I mean, to meditate. Because there's always a meal after that. I don't know. But anyway, forget the object completely, off the object completely. The correction for that is called Djembe. Djembe means you pull your mind back to the object, okay? Djembe in Tibetan means to remember. In colloquial, it means I think about it. But in meditation, it means Njemba, more Njemba, which means to drag the mind forcefully back to the mind. Njemba means drag, okay? Drag it back, okay? So that's Njemba, okay? What problem are we on? Three, right? You can't talk. That's pretty bad. Three is called Chingunyi, Chingwa and Gopa, okay? By the way, some ancient texts split them and treat them differently, and they say there are six obstacles. Chingwa means you get tired in a meditation, okay? You start to space out. You either get tired or you space out. If you want to induce chingwa on an experimental level, just eat too much and then try to meditate, okay? Then you can see what chingwa is. I don't have to explain it, okay? Eat before meditation. Eat too much, eat stupid food, right? Like sugar and carbohydrates and greasy food. And then try to meditate. And you'll get chingwa, and you don't have to ask me. If you don't sleep enough, you'll get chingwa, all right? You feel dull, you feel tired. I once asked David Lai, you know, how can I prevent getting sleepy in meditation? What can I do? While I'm meditating, what should I do when I get sleepy? He says, sleep more. He's like, you know, the night before, just sleep more. And sleep enough, okay? Sleep enough. Okay, so that's for you guys especially. It's no big, what do you call it? Virtue to stay up all night and then you can't meditate the next day. So sleep as much as you need to sleep. If it's 7, if it's 8, if it's 9. If it's over 12 hours, I would cut it. But, you know, sleep what you need to sleep, okay? And if the fourth session thing is not working, and if it makes you a little cuckoo, then do three sessions and get enough sleep, okay? Sleep is totally necessary. You've got to have sleep. Or it's just not going to go, and you'll use up to 3 years and all those caretaker trips, and, you know, you won't get anywhere. So you got to have enough sleep, okay? Chima. Gopa means thinking about breakfast, thinking about dinner, thinking about something else. Gopa means the mind is distracted. The solution for those is there's a joke in the meditation text because the solution for them is not a solution. It's called sheshin. Sheshin means the ability to watch your own mind as you meditate, particularly the ability to watch your mind to see if it got sleepy or to see if it got distracted. Okay, so the capacity to watch your own mind and see if it gets sleepy or distracted is called sheshin. If you think about it, it's not a correction for chingwa or gopa. It's just a recognition of it, right? It's just an awareness of it. So in the traditional meditation text, there's a joke, you know, like there's no correction for number three at number three, because really sheshin just rings the alarm. Sheshin just says, my mind's not concentrated right now. Or my mind's sleepy right now. But that's a big deal. If you can step back from your mind and see that the mind is not working at optimum, right? Then you can do something about it. Problem number four is dumicchepa. Dumicchepa means don't do anything about it when you detect that your mind is sleeping or your mind is thinking about lunch, okay? So that's called dumicchepa. Dumicchepa means failing to take action when you should take action, okay? The correction for that is very exotic. It's called taking action, okay? And then you know, If you're feeling sleepy, you take action for that. If you're feeling distracted, you take action for that. That'll be a lot of our talk. We'll talk a lot about that. What you do for the two classic problems of meditation. Meditation in Sanskrit is samapatti. In Tibetan, it's nyongjuk. It means to maintain a state of balance, okay? To maintain a state of equilibrium between thinking about too much stuff and not thinking about anything, okay? So really, it's just a balance, okay? The word for meditation, one of the main words for meditation is to maintain a balance or maintain an equilibrium between thinking about too much stuff or being spacey and not thinking about anything, all right? The fifth problem is called duchepa, which means to take action when action is no longer required. Okay, when the mind is cruising and the mind is on a good roll, then I don't know. I used to have a diamond factory, right? Jewelry factory, and they would say, "If it ain't broken, don't fix it." You know. So if the mind is going well in meditation, then leave it alone and let up on the observation of the mind. Relax the observation of the mind slightly so that that doesn't become a distraction, okay? So those are the... And the antidote for number five is Tanyam Sushapa, which means leave well enough alone. If the mind is going well, if the meditation is going well, don't interfere, all right? So those are the five problems, those are the eight classical solutions. Now we'll go to the nine levels of meditation, okay? Mm-hmm. I'm going to pull out some notes, but I think I got it in my hand. Let me see. Yeah, forget it. Listen. One is called Samjopa. The first one is called Samjopa. Samjopa means setting your mind on the object for the first time. Okay? Just putting your mind on the object. Alright? That involves something very serious and something very major. That involves the selection of an object, right? So before you put your mind on a meditation object, you have to decide what you're going to meditate about. And that's a huge decision. That's a very, very big decision. In a three-year retreat, that's a major decision. Because, you know, you could be stuck with the same object for 6 weeks or something, or 6 months, or you have to choose an object carefully. So it doesn't sound very glorious. To say I reached the first meditation level doesn't sound very glorious, but the proper selection of an object is crucial, right? Then there are six powers or six ways of getting to these different levels of meditation. The power which allows you to get to level one is called tipitot. Tipitot means learning about, what do you call it? Candidates for meditation objects from your teacher, okay? Like going to your lama and discussing with them by handwritten notes, of course. What would be an appropriate object for the next bedroom? Or you see, so the selection of an object draws from tepetok, which means learning or study or consultation with your lama, okay, and getting some guidance. Lama Krishna's been, I think, guiding people very well in retreat, and you can go check in and get a prescription from the doctor about what would be a good meditation object for you for the next week or month or 6 months, okay? That would be tipetok. The second of the nine levels of meditation is called gindijopa. Gindijopa means for the first time, after some effort, you're able to maintain your mind on the object for brief periods of time, you know, for maybe half a minute or a single minute at a time, you're able to get some continuity on the object, okay? Brief periods of continuity on the object, okay? But mostly, if you counted up minutes, much more minutes off the object, okay? So most of us never get past two. I don't think so. On most days, I have trouble getting past two, okay? Like, to getting more time on the object than off the object is a struggle, okay? So that's called Gimi Jopa, where you're able to have some continuity on the object, but you're off the object more than you're on it, okay? By the way, around here, there's also some feelings. There's three or four they call feelings related to the nine realms. And the feeling around here between one and two is that when you first start to meditate, and you're aware for the first time of how your level of concentration, how good it really is, they say you get a feeling of depression. Okay. Or you feel upset. You know, you're like, you know, now that you really listen to your mind and you're aware of how much your mind is on the object, you begin to be aware that you're not on the object very often, okay? And then they say you feel a little bit upset or something like that, or, you know, dismayed. And then they say, don't feel bad. It was worse than that before you started noticing. And don't beat yourself up. It's normal to think at the beginning of the process that you're getting worse, because you were always bad, but you were never aware of it. Okay? And now that awareness is growing, and your meditation is improving, but it feels like it's getting worse. So at the beginning, don't feel bad if you think your meditation is getting worse. If you think your meditation is getting worse, it's probably getting better, but that's not for sure either. Okay. Gimi Jopa, so some slight continuity on the object. That's achieved by called Sambito. Sampa means considering the instructions you got from your teacher. So the instructions are granted from your teacher, right? How to meditate. You reach level one at your teacher's house when they're telling you what would be a good meditation object. You reach level two at your house when you are starting to work. Sampa means contemplation. Even while you're eating dinner or you're relaxing or you're doing your gardening or whatever, you are considering the object that your teacher gave you, like you're thinking about it. And then that enables you to have some slight continuity, Gimi Jopa, okay? So those are the powers at number two. Those two, there's a mode, right? There's four modes, okay, if you care. There's four modes. That's called Gimi Jopa. Gimi Jopa means the first two levels require quite concerted effort. Like you're going to need a lot of effort to get your mind on the object for the first time and to maintain any kind of continuity in the object. They require substantial effort. It's called Gimi Jopa, okay? Level three is called Lenta Jopa. Lenta Jopa means... Lemba means a patch, like the patch you put on some clothing when it gets a hole in Tibetan. And Lenta Jopa means mostly you're on the object, and then you have some periods off the object. So the difference between level three and level two is that you're more often on the object than off the object. But you have gaps when you're off the object, and you have to patch those gaps. So it's called, you know, patching stage. Level three is called patching stage, where you're starting to patch the meditation, Lenta Jopa. That level is achieved through Jemba. Jemba means the ability to drag the mind back to the object, okay? So to reach level three, where you're mostly on the object, you have to have an increasingly developed capacity to bring the mind back to the object after you lose it, okay? That's Lenta Jopa. And that's Jemba, okay? The fourth state is called Nyewa Jopa. Nyewa Jopa means the mind is on the object constantly, okay? The mind is strong on the object, okay? And you have a good grasp. What do you call it? You're holding, you're maintaining the object well. Nyewa Jopa means close application or something like that, okay? So Nyewa Jopa. That's also achieved through Jemba. Jemba meaning now you're able to drag the mind back constantly to keep it. Jemba is fully developed by that point. The ability to drag the mind back to the object is fully developed by level four. Okay, but something else is also fully developed, which is Chingwa and Grubba. Okay, so Chingwa means what we said. You got tired, or you got started to space out, So at that point, Qingwan, Gopa means distraction. You're able to stay on the object, which qualifies you for distraction and sleepiness, okay? You can't get distracted if you're not on the object. Okay? Like, never being on the object doesn't count as distraction, got it? I can honestly say I have achieved high states of meditation where I didn't think about the object once during the whole meditation session. But that takes practice. Okay. So that's Nyarlathotpa. But you still have pretty heavy... You have pretty serious distraction and dullness, okay? Agitation and dullness. Qingwan Gopa. The next stage, what do you call it? Is called Tuwarchepa. Tuwa means to tame or to subdue. It's the word Vinaya in Sanskrit. And Tuwarchepa means... what happens when you get on the object is you start fighting against dullness and agitation, right? You focus the mind increasingly inwards. So your meditation is getting better. It's almost like a pratyahara. So you're better able to draw your mind in and keep your mind in. That has two undesirable results. One is that you get tired. Okay, the effort required to draw the mind totally in and to keep it there, it makes you tired. Okay, and it leads to some kind of qingwa chomo, which is the big enemy of all meditators. Okay, qingwa chomo means subtle dullness. Okay, unnoticed dullness of the mind, lack of excitement or verve. So anyway, pizzazz. Lack of pizzazz in your meditation, okay? So at that point, Duwachepa, you become able to defeat the subtle dullness which comes from overly concentrating the mind in, okay? Or feeling tired from the effort of keeping the mind inside. The next one is called what? Shivachepa. What number are we on? Six, right? Shivachepa. Shivachepa means to put it to rest, okay? To put it to rest. At Shivachepa, they say you are exploring the other half of dullness. So what happens when you have dullness is you have to do a thing called Sanktopa. Sanktopa means when the mind gets dull or when the mind gets sleepy from effort or from overly drawing the mind in, the effort of or from tiredness, then you start to get tired and you start to lose it. Then they say you have to, what do you call it, perk the mind up. So Sanktopa means to perk the mind up, all right? The way you do that is to, you know, think about something cool, something that you find cool. For example, you're supposed to think about something like, oh, how lucky I am that I made it to the tent. And the first day, you know, sorry, not the first day, but I made it to the tent for the Great Retreat teachings, you know? Like, I didn't die on the way or something like that. I'm one of the X number of people who made it to the tent at the Great Retreat teachings. And that's supposed to perk you up. Just considering all the people who die on the way or who didn't make it here, you know, you're not one of them. So you're supposed to feel perked up, okay? That's called Shivachepa. You've basically overcome... gross subtle dullness. Okay. Then there's a thing called Namashivachepa. Okay, Namashivachepa means totally... What are we on? Seven. That's seven, yeah. Seven is Namashivachepa, okay? You have overcome subtle dullness, you have overcome subtle agitation, all right? Mostly. Like it's difficult for them to combat. Like, mostly you've overcome them, and it's difficult for them to combat. You can almost maintain a whole session of meditation just with that much effort, okay? Having stopped them, all right? Still, they say there's no danger of wallowing in them, but there's a danger of them happening, got it? So it's a difference between shorwa and chua means you're not wallowing in them, okay? You know, like... Okay? Like, at least you're pretty sharp. All right. The next one is called Tse Chikta Chepa. Tse Chikta Chepa. Level 8, right? Tse Chikta Chepa means you're really good. You don't have any serious opposition from subtle dullness or subtle agitation. But it requires some effort to start to, at the beginning of your meditation, you need to exert some effort to stop them, okay? And then it's not required anymore, okay? So at the beginning of your session, as you go into a meditation session, you check your mind, you check in for subtle dullness, subtle agitation, and then you punch them out and they're gone for the whole session, all right? Like that. That's called Sechik. Sechik to Chepa means single-pointed mind. You reach the state of single-pointed mind, okay? Levels 3 up to level 7. Choose level 7. 3, 4, 5, 6, 7. Those 5 levels are called Chedu Chupa. Chechin Chupa means they can still be interrupted by dullness, sleepiness, or by thinking about lunch, okay? Those 5 levels are still liable to interruption by thinking about lunch or sleeping. Alright, that's called Chechin Chupa. When you get to level 8, that's not the case anymore, okay? Level 8 requires Tsun Drukhi Top, means you still gotta... what do they say? There's a beautiful thing in the scripture, they say... I forget. Anyway, you will have an uninterrupted meditation except for the beginning. Okay? Except at the beginning. Alright? So, that's called Sindhu Kitop. You have to put a little bit of effort out. Alright? We're up to level 9. The final level of the traditional meditation instructions. Level 9 is called... what is that called? It's Sindhu Chichepa. Then... and then Nyoma Jupa Samapati. Okay, it's called the balanced meditation. Okay, Nyoma Jupa means at level 9, you no longer have to put out any effort to get to a state totally free of dullness and distraction. Okay, you sit down, the backs of your hands touch your knees. And you're already in a deep meditation, right from the beginning. No effort is required. It's achieved through called Yongsu Jukta Tok. Yongsu Jukta Tok means you're so good at it and you're so used to it that the minute the hands come down on the knees, you're into a state of deep meditation and you're just there, okay? Now comes the fun part, which is what I was trying to get to. We still have time. That's not shamatha, okay? It's called... Shine Jetumba. Shine Jetumba means it's a close but no cigar shamatha. Okay? It's called close but no cigar shamatha. If you want to know the Tibetan word for cigar, you gotta ask me later. It means, it's called Dusam Tsechipa. It means you are still, the state of mind is still in the desire realm. Okay? The state of mind is still in the desire realm. You are not free from the desire realm. It's close to shamatha, and you're doing very well. You know, how many people reach level 9? I don't know. Very few, okay? By the way, you don't have to be a Buddhist, and you don't have to have high spiritual things in mind to reach level 9. Certain baseball players have it. Certain cricket players have it. It's just total concentration. It's the capacity for total concentration. You can be not spiritual, and if you have the karma... you can reach high states of concentration. All right. So level 9 is like a high state of concentration. Level 9 is not yet aimed at the ultimate object, which is trying to understand where everything came from. Okay. Trying to understand where your world has come from. Okay. Which leads us to one more meditation. Okay. Are you ready? Okay. Sit up straight. Watch your breath, stay on your breath. Back to that vision, let me come back to that question of how happy are you in these years of your life? Are these years of your life going well? And frankly, I mean, it's a frank evaluation. How happy am I right now? Am I at peace? Do I feel contented with my life? If I'm not completely contented, if my life is not fully happy, so, and if I had to identify one or two things which were preventing my happiness, what would they be? Maybe a person, maybe a situation, maybe a place, maybe something about your health. What stands between you and that glowing light of complete happiness in your life? Then review what's the history of the circumstances which brought this person into my life, or this challenge into my life, or the circumstances into my life, or what's the history of my physical illness or unhappiness or depression? What's the history behind? What were the events leading up to the things which are preventing me from being completely happy? Now let's turn a Mahamudra twist to the last part. How much of the history of that problem or that person or those circumstances or that health problem, how much of that has come from my own behavior? How much of that has come from how I've treated others? how much of my history is tied up into the history of what's preventing me from being happy? How much of the person or the circumstances or the health problem that I have now that's holding me back from complete happiness, how much of that has been my responsibility? How much of that is coming directly from my own behavior? How much of what most upsets me or makes me unhappy in my life is a reflection of my own behavior in the last few months and years? Then slowly come out of this meditation. Release the meditation. Come back to this place. So I was thinking a lot about my three-year retreat, and I was thinking a lot about, you know, if I had known this or if I had known that, maybe it would have been a more fruitful. It was very valuable, very beautiful time of my life and a very important event in my life. But I was trying to think, how could I, what could I say that would help somebody else in a three-year retreat to avoid maybe some basic mistakes or, you know, move faster towards their goal. I think one important exercise for all practitioners in general, but especially if you're in a three-year retreat, I think it would be to sometimes, maybe while you're having a meal or relaxing, resting, to think about how do I feel right now in these few weeks or in the last few days? Am I becoming noticeably happier? Is my practice, is my retreat, are the practices I've chosen to concentrate on, are they leading, not every day, right, but gradually, very slowly, over a week's time or month's time, is my state of mind becoming more contented and more at peace with myself? And is the process of retreat making me happier? And I think sometimes we get so caught up in the Sanskrit sources and the, you know, textual proofs that we sometimes we fail to just ask ourselves the most basic question: is, am I, it's not even, is my concentration better or like that? I think the barometer of your meditation and the barometer of your understanding, one of my first lamas, Geshe-la Rinpoche Dage, he told me, are you happier? You know, do you feel happier than you were a month ago or 6 months ago? Is your practice resulting in an increased feeling of contentment or happiness? And if it's not, then it needs adjustment. Then something is, then there's some kind of small I think sometimes it could be small, some kind of small problem. It's not that we weren't reciting the right pages, or we didn't get up at the right time, or something like that. There has to be some deeper cause. I think it has to do with intention. I think it has to do with how much of what I'm doing right now am I doing because I want to contribute to other people's happiness. You see, how much of my current practices are, do I have very conscious desire to help others, or is my retreat mixed up with some other motivations, you see? And it always is. All of what we all do is mixed up. The intentions, the motivations are always mixed up. But I think the ability to step back and observe your own mind and examine the motivations. And I don't think it's even a thing of confessing insufficient motivation, or I don't think that's the way to go. I think it's more like, what can I do? How will this retreat help me to serve other people better? And so, rather than making it a exercise in rooting out insufficient motivations, I think you can cover it in a lot more exciting way if you just say, well, how will my current practices enable me to take care of people better? Because all of us are doing good practices. I think all of us are. I don't think we need maybe such a big change in what we're doing. Probably the time you get up is okay. And probably the sun that you're reciting is okay. And probably whatever you're doing as a job, or the family you have, or probably for you, there's a karma involved and they've come to you for a reason, and you're going to reach enlightenment through that set of people and circumstances. But so I don't think oftentimes it's people tend to come to a lama and say, I don't know if I should be doing this sadhana or that sadhana, or I don't know if this deity is good for me, or maybe I need another deity, or you know, maybe I shouldn't get up at 3:30, maybe I should get up at 4 o'clock. I mean, I don't think that's the main thing. I think just to try to develop the capacity to step back from our mind and look at our mind and say, am I happy? You know, do I feel at peace? Do I feel more and more at peace? And I think to ask the question to ourselves, how can I serve others with what I'm doing now? What application can my current practices and life and job and family, how can I use them to help other people? And then that's enough. And then the happiness will derive from that, I think. There are some inbuilt problems to our happiness. Our mind and body have, from beginning this time, there are certain structural problems with our mind and our prana. And then we can correct those, but first we need to learn about them. And so I thought tomorrow we'll discuss how to go from level 9 to shamatha, a state of concentration with which you can really help people. And we'll talk about structural parts of the inner body that we can work on to serve others better. So I'd like to do a dedication. Okay. Sashi Pankhi Chishi Netan Sangye Shindu Mikte Uwari Joker. It's nice. The paper and pen seems to work well because you can take the papers home and reread the ideas that we had together. And then please maybe write down your questions before you come. Have them clear in your mind before you come, okay? And then just try to be on time. And then I extended the time here to meet everyone, but we only have half an hour each, so... try to be just totally ready, and we'll get into it. And I'd like to thank all the other people for coming. And most of the people here are supporting the retreat in some way. And I'd like to thank you for that. It's been a very beautiful. It's a major. You know, the last retreat we did was like 4 or 5 people. And this one is like 40, 50 people, and if we count the caretakers, and it's a huge undertaking. It's a very, very ambitious undertaking. And of course, the building of the 30 cabins was not a small thing in itself. And I'd just like to thank everybody, the retreatants and the other people here. You really inspired people all over the world. People all over the world talk to me. They are very, very inspired by your deep commitment and your devotion and the fact that you built this place and what you're doing. You're really inspiring people all over the world. And they love it. They're very excited about you. And then you guys are making it happen. And I ask you to keep going, okay? We need everyone's help, and it's beautiful. Your support and their efforts have come together very sweetly. And be happy, you know, like take joy in what you're doing, because they're doing a great job, and you guys are doing a great job. And it's a beautiful thing that so many people would care about each other and take care of each other. So, you know, be happy, you know, about it. Okay. That's all. Let's see you guys tomorrow. Okay.